This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring defense attorney, Hidden Killers daily contributor, and host of the Defense Diaries podcast, Bob Motta.
Back to Delphi, Judge Gull still on the case. Baldwin and Rossi are back on the case as well. However, the speedy trial request, well, that's not going to happen, according to the Indiana Supreme Court. But like I said, Baldwin and Rossi are back. Judge Gull is going to stay. One out of the three motions, I guess, ain't bad. That was one out of three, so it's not quite the Meatloaf song. Joining me to discuss, Bob Motta, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries. Probably not surprised by what went down and what was granted, but here we go again. We got Baldwin and Rossi back, and Judge Gull pretty much immediately back at it, saying that Frank's hearing that we were like about to literally have, like people are here for it, and then I'm going to dismiss all of you. We're not going to do that anymore because I didn't want to have it in the first place. That's why I got rid of you. Didn't say that, but yeah. So are you surprised? Because this just seems like we continue to go. And we're not de-escalating the insanity here. It just keeps going up with Judge Gull.
Yeah, no, I'm not surprised by the way it went down. I thought that they'd get back on. I thought that they would keep her on. And I thought the 70-day trial date was of no import to the Supreme Court because they can still file their speedy demand. Mm-hmm. They have the ability to do that themselves. So the court didn't really need to address it in terms of what she decided to do two business days after the Supreme Court basically said, and without there being an opinion yet, mm-hmm. like that's the one thing that we need people to understand is that they put that order out in unbelievably fast, fashion in terms of it came out the same day that the hearing took place, reinstating those two guys. And, they said, but our opinion's coming. And that mm-hmm. opinion is very important. Because it's going to give all of us, and more importantly, the attorneys on the case, the understanding of what their rationale was with respect to why they made the decision. Because there was at least one judge that dissented. It could have been a 3-2 count. It could have been a 4-1 count. We don't know. My wife tends to believe, and I agree with her, that the most likely reason for the dissent was the fact that they had not necessarily argued with what we thought that they should have, Allison and I, which was that they had entered their pro bono appearance, that they were no longer appointed counsel, but that they were in fact counsel of choice by way of them entering that appearance. And they didn't really include that in their petition. Mm-hmm. So it was left with the fact that, okay, continuity of counsel, they were appointed attorneys. We think that, Gull just didn't follow due process, it wasn't done properly, there should have been a hearing, and that the bottom line is that one of the judges may have taken exception with the fact that they should be reappointed mm-hmm. as so they're getting paid by the county as opposed to they should be on as pro bono where mm-hmm. they're not getting paid.
Yeah,
because that was the part of that structural error argument. If that was taken at its face, would have existed if, in fact, the court would have looked at it and said, okay, well, we do consider them to have entered their private appearance as private counsel, which then takes it out of that whole you've been appointed thing, because the case law there is not as strong. It's very murky with respect to whether or not Gull can just remove them. Once it becomes, hey, we're entering our appearance pro bono, we've given you the evidence that Richard Allen wants us as his attorneys. It changes the completely the analysis in terms of the Supreme Court mm-hmm. because of that Gonzalez case. And it basically says, look, this is private counsel. She can't remove them. If it is, it's structural error, which means you're going to have to retry the case automatically. So yeah. She tends to think that's probably the reason. And I think that probably is the reason for the dissent. There was probably a judge there saying, no, they should have brought that, because that's what the record shows happened mm-hmm. and they're just trying to get paid on it. And I don't think that under the law, that's an available option for them. Cause mm-hmm. I think that they were appointed counsel and, I'm not buying the continuity argument. So it shocked me that she decided to do what she did. Like I said, two business days after the order came down without the opinion being out there. And you know, the Supreme Court very clearly stating that this record that you've created, Judge Gull, sucks. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we have no record. There is, like, this record is devoid of any substance, and for her to do it again.
Yeah.
Because when she goes ahead and denies not just the Franks hearing, but the motion to suppress, as well as the motion for the motion eliminate for the ballistics, she denied all three of them in a summary fashion, giving no real rationale as to why, citing no case law at all, you know, in a summary opinion on three major motions. Like, all she's doing is doing the exact same thing that the Supreme Court literally just admonished her for doing during the entirety of the case. It was like, it was incredibly befuddling to me.
Yeah.
I think why she did it, this is my, because she knows they are going to re-up their motion to recuse her. Mm-hmm. And I think she was trying to beat them, because once that happens, once they file the motion for her to be removed or recusal, she has no ability to rule on substantive motions until that's dealt with.
Oh.
So I think she was trying to beat them to the punch, because mm-hmm. she anticipated that thing coming down any day. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, before you do, I'm going to deny all your motions. But there's, like, to me, there's still the argument that Rosie had filed one. Mm-hmm. He had already filed a recusal motion the same day that he had filed his verification that he was still Richard Allen's counsel, which was after the 19th and before the 31st. So it happened in between. So, like, it's a real gray area as to whether or not Rosie had actually withdrawn. He had made representations that he was going to, which, you know, I guess you could argue both sides of it. You know, is that enough to consider him to be withdrawn? If you're looking at the statute in Indiana, no, it's not even close. I mean, it requires that the defendant be given, you know, notice in writing, you know, and that, like, there's a whole process for it. It's not just like, okay, I'm withdrawing, you know, and the defendant was never ever present on the 19th in front of the judge on the record where she's admonishing him, saying, look, you now don't have attorneys. I'm going to appoint new attorneys for you. You know what I mean? So that didn't happen. So, you know, but there is a valid argument, which would basically mean if Rosie's first recusal motion was found to be valid, in terms of, she would have been foreclosed from making those rulings anyway, mm-hmm. which wouldn't stop her from down the road just making the same rulings again, you know, because the way it's going to go in Indiana, and I had the discussions with a lot of Indiana attorneys when I was at the hearing, is that she's going to sit on her own recusal hearing. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? It's not going to be an independent judge. It's going to be her deciding whether or not she's biased.
Isn't that just a prime example of a major error in our system, if that's how that works?
I mean, dude, don't get me started. I don't know. Like, I was sitting there. I was like, really? Really? I was talking. I had like three or four Indiana attorneys with me. And I'm like, you're kidding me, right? I'm like, I could see I'm a conflict. Like, because they do the same thing here in Illinois. Like, you know, a judge will handle their own recusal if it's an issue of a conflict or a potential conflict. Because they'll typically say yeah or no.
And do the right thing.
I have a conflict. Yeah. But when it comes to bias, how are you having the judge who you're accusing of being biased ruling on their own? You think they're going to admit, yeah, I'm biased? They're not going to do that. Like, ever. I can't imagine a scenario in which, like, I keep hoping that when they file it, she's just going to say, you know what, like, with my new appointment as chief judge.
I mean, enough is enough. I mean, she seems to have ambitions to go to the Supreme Court. Is this, am I missing some of the tea leaves here? Is there some part of this, by acting this way, that's going to help her get there? That's just a selfish way of acting? Or is this just 100% ego?
I can't think that anything that she's doing now is helping her bid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, to get to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
You know, it's like everything that she continues to do in this has to be seen as a detriment to her bid to move up to the high court.
Yeah.
You know, like, I just don't know how she's thinking that she's helping herself with these kind of things that she's doing. It's just, it's bizarre, man.
Yeah.
Like, I wish I could crawl into her brain and figure out what she's thinking, or, like, is she taking advice from somebody who's given her really bad advice? Like, I just don't know, you know, because it's like, there's no part of me that thinks that she's in cahoots with McClelland. I mean, it's not even her county.
Yeah.
She doesn't know Nick McClelland from a hole in the ground. You know what I mean? This is all her independently handling these issues. But man, she's making the wrong choice, like left and right in the terms of how she's handling this case. And to me, when she did that, just like basically spitting in the face of the Supreme Court saying, your record is a shambles. And then just doing it again, like doubling and tripling and quadrupling down by denying three really big motions, you know, which look, if they're litigated, she may have found all of them to be denied
based at least
on
hear
the
them.
Fact that she didn't think there was enough, but at least hear them make a record, you know, let the attorneys argue it, let there be some case law cited, let the proper standard be applied. Like she applied the wrong standard in terms of her denial on the Franks, like flat out, you know, which just goes to show that she's, you know, she's flying from the hip, man. And it's reckless. Too big of a case with too many eyes on it. So I don't know.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advance access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.